Welcome to The Sandbox, a Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. Participate in the podcast and get your level 7 access by calling 304-837-2278 or go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here are your hosts, Mike and Dave.
Welcome, everybody, to The Sandbox, a Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast, where we record on computers. These are computers, right? My name is Mike.
And I'm Dave, and this is show number 90 of The Sandbox, where we'll be discussing Season 5, Episode 11 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., entitled All the Comforts of Home, which aired March 2nd, 2018.
And this episode was written by Drew Z. Greenberg and directed by Kate Woods, who appears to be directing at least one episode in each of the last three seasons. And it's great to be back, first of all, Dave, because we had a month off there. And what a shift this has been. I almost feel like I've gone back in time to an earlier iteration of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, well, on the one hand, I want to say what a smooth transition. On the other hand, as you said, it's like we're in a different world.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how I feel about it, because it does seem to be very similar to the Talbot framework that we've had before, no pun intended, but I can't wait to see what they do with it, because there are some interesting twists, and I love this new character. In fact, I want to talk a little bit about Dove Cameron as Ruby. Dove Cameron is an actress who has been trying to shake her Disney origins, I think, because she was in Descendants and Liv and Maddie, two shows on the Disney Channel, or at least Disney produced. And she does love Marvel, and she has voiced that in a couple of interviews. And I happen to notice that on her IMDb page, she does have a Marvel credit. She voices Gwen Stacy in Marvel Rising Secret Warriors, which is set to be released later in 2018. And when I looked up the synopsis of this particular animated series that they're going to do, it's also featuring the voices of Chloe Bennett as Daisy Johnson and Ming-Na Wen, who doesn't voice her character here on S.H.I.E.L.D., but rather a Kree named Hala. So I thought that was really cool. It's something that people might want to check out, just to hear those voices of Chloe Bennett and Ming-Na Wen. And of course, hear the stylings of Dove Cameron, who appears to be setting herself up for a real scene stealer of a character in Ruby.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, General Hale, not my favorite character, but the way she's presented with her daughter, I think this is going to be quite a ride with these two. But the other thing I wanted to bring up before we get into the episode discussion, that, you know, I noticed on the internet, there's a lot of buzz about a line that Melinda May speaks to Noah, who mentions, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. being mentioned frequently on his monitors. And she says, a small but active fan base. And of course, the internet buzz seems to think that's a nod to the fans, which it very well may be.
That's exactly how I took it.
And if it is, that's really cool. And if it's not, it's just a great line.
Yes, it does have a small but active fan base. And yeah, it's interesting to see the evolution of Season 5, because there have been mixed reviews out there from the fans as well as critics. But, you know, I really enjoyed the first half, but I think this second half is going to have to prove itself. To me, at least. I don't know how other people feel about it, but I really enjoyed aspects of this one, but I'm still holding some reservations, and I can't wait to see what they do with it and maybe knock me on my feet, because it's been done before. You know, they go against all expectations. So I'm hoping that's the case for the last half of Season 5.
Well, and I think what S.H.I.E.L.D. has going for it, which is really what it's had going for it all five seasons, the characters are so great and the actors that portray them are so great. And sometimes even a less than stellar script is just really entertaining anyway.
Yeah, and of course there were a lot of moments for our favorite characters in this one. So let's go ahead and get right into it with our episode discussion.
Well, obviously, Mike, we've got the S.H.I.E.L.D. team returning to present day Earth. And I guess one question that we have to ask, and it doesn't get answered here, is how much time has elapsed
since they left the diner, you mean?
Right. A few weeks, a few months. I mean, obviously not a lot, but
they do indicate that General Hale has been looking for them. So you figure at least some time has passed.
Right. A few weeks. And I don't know that it matters whether we'll ever find out or not, but it certainly did occur to me. And I love the fact that they materialize in the lighthouse, which certainly makes sense. And we'll talk about the three monoliths that were presented later in the discussion. So, you know, again, as we know, they're in a different time, same space. And that video of General Rick Stoner, how cool was that?
Yeah, Patrick Warburton in his finest administrative voice, because he does that very well. And General Rick Stoner is, of course, from the Marvel Comics. He was the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. before Fury.
Well, you know, and what I love is his so matter of fact. If you're watching this video, the world as we know it has come to an end.
Yes.
Okay. What?
He's a little too happy about it.
And, you know, we hear about Project Reclamation, a black op. And obviously, Coulson has heard of Stoner, and he sort of puts two and two together that, you know, this must have been initiated in 1972, but obviously never came to fruition. So I guess what we look at is the lighthouse has been set up as this elaborate safe house of sorts for S.H.I.E.L.D. and who, I guess, the military?
Well, yeah, and it kind of begs the question, how was this particular facility not in Fury's toolbox? And I almost feel like it's a narrative ploy here that they're pulling to make sure we realize that the reason they didn't know about this facility before is because it wasn't in Fury's little cube, which it should have been, if you really think about it. It's not all that secretive. It's not like, you know, Agent Koenig's secret facilities that he was in charge of, but such as it is.
Right, because it would kind of be important for Coulson to know about it, but as you said, you know, that's okay. Now, one of the questions we had was, how is Daisy going to react to Coulson icing her? And I think we all suspected it would transpire more or less as it did. But I really, you know, that scene when she wakes up and when he says, did you think there'd be any universe where I'd leave you behind? I mean, that really got to me emotionally. I thought that was just a great short scene.
Well, especially since the strategy that she then employs moving forward is to just not go with them, which she should have realized could have been something that they could do anyway. They're never going to leave her in the future. They have to at least have her, even if they have to lock her up to prevent her from destroying the world, you know?
Right. And you know, we always talk about the pairings within an episode, and Fitz and May are two that don't ordinarily work together. And even though we don't really see them working together a lot here, you know, they take the tour, they go to the weapons room, and that's where we see the three monoliths, including the one with the red horizontal stripes. And I guess what we have to ask, right, we know one transports through time, one transports through space. I don't know. What do you think about the other one?
Yeah, the one with spirals on it. It's something that might come into play or might just leave us speculating.
But transports through dimensions? I mean...
Oh, yeah, could be.
I mean, we have three, and if we had a fourth, what would be our fourth possibility? I don't know that there would be one, so I think they've got the three.
Well, there could be different locations in space besides Mavith, I guess.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Well, it could be sort of like the Stargate system.
Yeah.
Something like that. But they also run into Noah, who introduces himself as a Chronicom, and I kept waiting for one of them to put their hand up, stop. We know, and they kind of did when he gets to the end of his little speech. But it leads me to wonder if there are two, are there three, are there four, where are they? Are we going to find out more about Chronicoms?
Yeah, and why was he here at this particular point? I mean, did they know that there would need to be a replacement? I guess I just kind of picture Enoch setting up the thing where Fitz was going to be sent in that cryogenic chamber and lining up his replacement so that he could go be with them at that distant time. So this guy, Noah, does a great job of imitating the same mannerisms as Enoch. He's an actor that I know from Bones. He plays a very interesting intern on that show, very similar personality to Noah. But I liked his delivery, and he's definitely a worthy replacement, a more comedic replacement, you might say, for Enoch.
Well, I felt like he was a little more mechanical than Enoch was, although Enoch's speech had a certain stilted character to it. But even in movements, I felt like he was a little bit more mechanical. But I love when he makes those comments about Enoch not really following the rules, not really doing what he's supposed to be doing. He's sort of a rebel Chronicom, I guess.
Yeah, you know, relatively speaking.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Noah takes Fitz and May up to that monitoring system. And again, he brings out that whole idea of observing without interfering unless it's an extinction level event. And that, of course, is brought up tonight when Daisy, you know, wants him to go spring Deke from jail. But there's that light from the sky, and this is where it all starts. Now, of course, we know what it ends up being. But at this point, I mean, geez, everything's in play, you know, from aliens to the military to whoever.
Yeah, and I like the fact that they led us down a garden path, making us think that it was calling to aliens, because it automatically makes you think, okay, this is where Cassius's father comes into play. But perhaps that's not even the case at all. Or if it is, the people who put this beacon in place to call to S.H.I.E.L.D. to purposely bring them in and be captured didn't realize what they would be doing by using this as their decoy. And so we still might be dealing with Cassius's father.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, you know, at this point, they realize that they are wanted. They just didn't understand right away how wanted the S.H.I.E.L.D. team is. But they learn that there are tunnels underground that will take them a good part of the way to River's End. Now, they've got Zephyr hidden just outside the lighthouse, right?
Yeah, yeah, in a field, it looks like.
Right. So they find out about these tunnels. They go to River's End. And I love when they emerge and they're all just kind of this sense of wonder. Now, not so much as Deke, who actually resorts to hugging a tree, but I guess just that normality of being home and breathing it all in. We're not sure how long they were gone, but certainly long enough to, I guess, have lost a sense of what it was really like. And, you know, you don't know what you're missing until you are actually gone. So love that scene.
Oh yeah. That definitely was a moment that needed to happen in order to make that transition.
Yeah. And you know, I've said the last couple of weeks, Mac is really taken a turn for the better in my eyes, in terms of, you know, decisions he makes, in terms of, you know, stances he takes. So when they need wheels, and they spot that old VW bus, and he doesn't actually say it, but they know what he's thinking. No, we can't steal it. And Coulson's like, dude, we'll return it, I promise. And then I love at the end, you know, they've got the little note returned to, I forget what the guy's name is, but.
Yeah. Well, it's a small town. And I like that they not only leave that note, but also run into the cops. I mean, there's a lot of different deception along the way to make the audience feel afraid for them or feel trepidatious. But, you know, it was just the cop saying, oh, someone actually bought that hunk of rust. So apparently they haven't been paying too close attention to the most wanted bulletins.
Right. And you wonder, I mean, how many times a day can a police officer look at those photos? And certainly while Quake has probably been in the news more than the others, and
she's not in the van, though.
Oh, right. Exactly. She's not in the van. So anyway, they make it to Zephyr. They go airborne. I don't know. I suspect Faith will have this line on the Cole Sass report. I've never loved gravity more, May tells Coulson as they get underway. And there are some great lines when they're talking about all the things they hate and all the bad things that have happened to them. And what does she say? Dancing.
The whole long list of all the different enemies that they faced, and her worst experience was dancing in season one.
Right. Now, when we see the beacon for the first time there, I don't remember that. I mean, are we supposed to recognize immediately that that's what that is?
Oh, no, not at all. But once they show us what it looks like, and I think they might even flash back to when it was used with Hive. But, you know, once they say that's what it was, then it became recognizable to me. But I don't think it was supposed to immediately produce recall in the audience.
Right. Okay. All right. Now, you mentioned General Hale earlier in the podcast, and of course, the introduction of her daughter, Ruby. So, you know, a lot of at least for the foreseeable future, it seems it's going to be about Hale trying to bring S.H.I.E.L.D. into military custody. So we get that introduction to Ruby, who's, you know, a bit of a rebel. I love the Quake is my hero poster on her wall. And you wonder what her fascination with Quake. And did you catch when her mother refers to her as Daisy and she corrects her, Quake?
Yeah, which surprised me, because then later on she said, you promised me Daisy Johnson.
Right.
You know, and that's the reason she doesn't complete the job. But I think what we're dealing with is a bit of fan obsession, or at least an obsession with bringing this particular person to bear. So I don't know what's going on here, but again, another great bit of deception where we're supposed to believe this is a normal mother-daughter dynamic, and it's far from that.
Well, it is, and there's something I want to bring up about, you know, her fascination with Quake, but I'll hold that off for a few minutes. But she asks her mother a really pointed question, which, you know, I think a lot of shows, I mean, certainly we had this in Continuum. She asks her mom, are you a good guy?
Yeah.
Because we talked at length whether Liberate were actually the villains they were made out to be, or was it the other way around? And I think we all changed our perception there. But S.H.I.E.L.D.'s perception in the world has changed, and whether or not that's as it should be, I think we tend to think, no, it's not, that it, you know, they're really being set up to take a fall.
The crazy thing about this question, though, is that doesn't she know? I mean, because she's part of what happens next. So there's not like a secrecy between mother and daughter in terms of the military operations. She's part of the military operations. So it just kind of surprised me in retrospect that she would need to ask that question. I mean, does she know the answer to that herself?
Yeah, I wonder. Is it that she just wants to hear her mother admit it? But
yeah.
The question I have, does Ruby have any powers? Or is everything she has a result of training? Because the fascination with Quake, I wonder if it's because she has powers of her own, and that's why she's locked in that secure facility.
Yeah, it's interesting. She could be inhuman, or she could just have a really keen sense of perception, but it seems to be almost too keen. We're talking about Yo-Yo here. I mean, we'll talk about that, of course, what she did, but I think it's definitely got to be some kind of powers, and I would only assume she got caught up in the inhuman transformation across the world.
Well, I guess, and you know, we are reintroduced to Carl Creel at the end, and not to jump too far ahead, but he's not inhuman, correct? He's just
right.
Enhanced.
Right. So there could be something else at play with Ruby.
Yeah. But so when we hear that she skips class, I assume they're training classes and not not English and American history.
Exactly.
But, you know, it turns out in that fight scene that, you know, that you're referring to with Elena, that she was the one that took out Yo-Yo. And I guess she had her little squad of, what do we call them, robots?
Yeah, exactly. Little minions, as it were. But it's interesting because she herself is also wearing a similar outfit to the robots. And I don't know if that's just to, you know, make them look like a unit, or whether or not that is some kind of enhanced suit, because, you know, we don't know if it's powers at play here. But what I thought that was most interesting, besides the fact that it wasn't Cassius who cut off her arms, that she came to him that way, which was very surprising, but the fact that she could do it at all, and the fact that it actually cut off Yo-Yo midstream. I mean, she started zooming around, the arms got cut off, and she did not Yo-Yo back to her original location because of that. Now, I don't know if that's because of the trauma of the event, but I found that very strange, because usually she ends up the same place she started from, and she did not.
I didn't even notice that. And of course, in Yo-Yo's, from her perception, that was always a drawback to her power.
Right. Exactly.
But this relationship between the mother and daughter, I mean, Hale's in power because Talbot's in a coma, which I love the fact that Talbot's in a coma, because that means he can come out of the coma.
Yeah, and he still was shot in the head. I have still have a problem with that, but okay.
You mean that he should be dead?
Yeah, he totally should be dead.
Okay, and I'm certainly with you on that. But I do love Glenn Talbot. And again, we're really not quite clear on what General Hale is all about. So, you know, maybe at some point Talbot will come out of the coma. He'll come back and he'll be the one that will end up saving S.H.I.E.L.D. or maybe not. But the whole idea that Ruby as a rebel apparently extends to her field work, because I guess she didn't do exactly what she was supposed to do here.
Exactly. And it's surprising that she would attribute that solely to the fact that Daisy was not there. So I definitely feel like we're dealing with not just a rebellious teenager, but someone who has their own goal that's completely different from what her mother has in mind. But I do love the dynamic. I mean, Ruby is excellent at, you know, giving her mother what for while being on the surface very polite.
Now, did you also see when she replaced that, what do we call it? You know, her like metal frisbee or.
Yeah. It's like an Araby, actually.
but she's got a whole case full of them. So you wonder, are they all the same or do they have different properties? But
like Coulson's different hands.
Yeah. But you mentioned dynamic and Deke Shaw making it to 2018 Earth. On the one hand, I'm thinking like, come on, are you kidding me? On the other hand, yes, that's cool.
Well, especially since that's exactly one of the things we speculated about in the last podcast. So I was not disappointed by this circumstance. In fact, I would have to say that Deke may have stolen the show this episode.
Oh, absolutely. No question. I am overjoyed that we get more Deke Shaw. And just from the point that he materializes in the middle of the town, goes over and hugs the tree, pulls the ice cream out of the trash. And I love the fact that he knows where he is. So on the one hand, he's amazed, but on the other hand, you know, he's got his bearings to a certain degree. But does his transport from the future now alter the future?
I don't know. I think it could still be consistent with a looping timeline.
Okay.
So it depends on what happens to him. But I think that because he immediately spots the bar that is in his version of the framework, that's not a coincidence.
Yeah.
You know, that has to feed back into his past, our future somehow. In other words, this occurrence of him experiencing it for the first time must end up being why his younger self is able to recreate it.
Yeah. As he says, I did get some of it right. And,
yeah.
And that whole bar scene. And I think the bartender was as amazing as Deke was. I mean, he goes in, he orders a beer, he takes one sip, and it's terrible. And he asks, you know, do you have anything that tastes good? He gives him a Zima. Is Zima even on the market anymore? I mean,
no, he must have had a case back in the basement. I think even Faith mentioned something about that in the live thread that Michael Keller started, that, you know, he probably was happy to get this taken off his hands.
But you wonder, again, we've been down this road in a lot of time travel shows. How's he going to pay for this? We know that confrontation is coming, and he has the cheeseburger, the onion rings. He's playing darts. He's got the television remote control, and the bartender's very calm. I mean, it's like, dude, come on, you know, you got to settle up. And it's like, oh, it's okay. I'm from the future. And then we cut to, you know, him in jail and he's still spouting off. But obviously the worry when Daisy's alert goes off is that he's going to spill the beans about them. And he seems to be cognizant of the fact that he can't do that.
Yeah, he does. I mean, he is not being very under the radar, certainly, but you can forgive him for his exuberance in that sense. And Daisy is pulled out of hiding specifically because of it. She didn't want to go on the mission, but I think she feels it's worth the risk to stop a catastrophe of Deke being in the wrong location and perhaps giving them away.
Right. And, you know, he's in jail drunk. The officers just ignore him. And Daisy comes wearing Noah's suit, looking much better in it than Noah did. And Noah looked good. But she's posing as Deke's social worker. And again, just some wonderful lines, some wonderful interplay between her and the sheriff. Just, you know, but at first viewing, I wasn't sure whether or not that officer called General Hale or if something else alerted Hale to S.H.I.E.L.D.'s presence. But on a rewatch, I think Hale says that she just got a call. So,
okay. Yeah, because I wasn't sure about that myself. So I'm glad you took the time to look back at that. But yeah, I mean, you obviously knew that it was going to be short-lived. You just weren't sure when or to whom General Hale would catch up to first.
Yeah. Now, you know, the other thing about S.H.I.E.L.D., I often say when I'm talking about the librarians with Wayne that it's a family show. You can, you know, watch it with your kids. You don't have to worry about anything. And I don't necessarily feel that way about S.H.I.E.L.D., but they took a step that they really haven't taken before that I can remember. I mean, that was pretty horrific what happens to Yo-Yo.
Oh, for sure. Even though we knew it was coming. Just not this soon, I don't think.
Yeah, well, you see, it came out of left field for me.
Yeah.
And as you said, you know, we knew it was coming, but just the way it transpired, and then just it wasn't necessarily a slow motion shot, but you just see that she's gone into shock immediately, and then the camera pans down and you see just the blood dripping from the stumps of her arms, and it's just, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was already pretty bad when we saw it in the future when it was all healed over, but much more horrific in this scene.
Oh, and, you know, even before we get to that, though, she's having trouble processing a lot of it because of meeting her other and, you know, the experience with Cassius. And I just love the interchange between her and Mac. And these two are really becoming my favorite couple. And I know we've got Fitz and Simmons, and they're great. And now May and Coulson, you know, it's great because the two of them now get some. But I don't know. There's something about that relationship between Elena and Mac that's really grabbing at me now.
Well, I think most of it is just their conversational tone is so believable and realistic and heartfelt. And this was a small scene, a small conversation that they had. But it was exactly the conversation that they would have had after the, you know, traumatic events of episode 10, where they're having just a small moment to talk about it.
Yeah. And he knows exactly what to say to her about the crushing of the rocks was perfect. And then her retort once she's feeling a little bit better, dude, I crush it anyway. And
so, yeah, you do.
Exactly. That was just wonderful. But then, is this too much for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, the loss of her arms? And, you know, I guess that's a question that everybody's got to answer. I mean, obviously we'll get past it. But now what? Does she get prosthetics like Coulson?
I don't know. That could be cool. I mean, because the thing is, even if she's missing them in Cassius's time, doesn't mean she never had anything there. It's just that she probably had them taken away like Coulson's hand.
Right. But, you know, in terms of the rest of season 5, how is Elena going to be presented? I mean, is she just going to be in a hospital bed? Is she, I mean, it seems hard to believe they're going to, you know, do the special effects to present her as having no arms.
Yeah, they're definitely going to give her new arms. I mean, we just went through a season with Ada and artificial bodies and such. It's probably second nature to Fitz by now.
Yeah. So, all right. Now, you know, we talked that scene where Ruby asks her mother, you know, are you one of the good guys? And we've got the return of Agent Piper, who's another one of those recurring characters that I think we all really enjoy, you know, when she's in an episode. And they're overjoyed when they run into her. Now, they enter, they call it Aerospace Industry Lab.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at first, I thought, okay, this is generic, an Aerospace Industry Lab. But I certainly noticed in the closed captioning, they capitalized aerospace and industry. So I don't know if that's significant. Is that a company we're supposed to know?
Probably not. Even if it is, it would just be a government contractor. So I don't think we're going to have to pay attention to that. But it is an interesting ploy that Agent Piper kind of just says, oh, I cleared everyone out and we're just trying to shut this thing down and I'm not having any luck. So definitely another one of the many deceptions in this episode that lead the viewer to believe one thing and then, you know, pull the rug out from under us.
Yeah, because it doesn't take long that we find out that Piper sold them out, but it's not quite black and white, you know, is it? Because she felt they were dead and she felt she was doing what Coulson asked her to do, which is tell our story.
Yeah, exactly. And she thought that General Hale would bring them in and, you know, keep them or bring them into the fold, as it were, and not necessarily leave them out in the cold or put them in custody. And you got to give kudos to Coulson for understanding that and immediately giving her a second chance, not just saying you betrayed us and we're not going to forgive you for it. So the fact that she's able to come back to their side quite quickly is actually ultimately very believable.
Yeah, because I think it would be a little bit harsh to consider her naive in this situation because, as we said, she did as she was told. She had no way of knowing what Hale would do with that information. But as you said, Piper, pick a side, but we're going. And, you know, for a split second, the wheels are turning, but, you know, I've got you covered, she tells them, and covers their escape. But the deal with the beacon heating up, is Noah now a casualty of war? Or
yeah, I guess it was a one and done type deal. I mean, he served his purpose, but also was able to sacrifice himself in a very similar way, in fact, that Enoch did. But yeah, very surprising that the beacon was meant to do that. General Hale, I think, even referred to it as kind of a plan B. If things went wrong, they could just blow it up anyway. But, you know, Noah saves the team in a very spectacular fashion, and now they're on their own again.
Right. But it all comes back to, why would you want to kill all of them?
That's true. That's a very good question. Why would General Hale have that as her plan B rather than pulling them in and capturing them? Because it seems like, you know, Ruby's obsession aside, because obviously she has her own reasons for wanting Quake in their custody. I have no idea what. But what is General Hale's goal? To use them? To manipulate them? Are we dealing with a Hydra type situation? I mean, we still have a very, very unknown quantity with General Hale's motivation.
Yeah. I mean, it would just seem to me to make more sense, you know, lock them up until you figure out how they might be useful, particularly Quake.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that she wasn't there, she should maybe cut Ruby some slack on that one, because that would be one of their main goals, I would think.
Yeah. So, well, then we get to the epilogue. We're in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. General Hale's car pulls up to a guy running. Turns out to be Carl Creel, who we, you know, mentioned earlier in the podcast, the absorbing man. And as we said, he's enhanced rather than an inhuman.
Right. And this is another callback. We've had lots of callbacks in this season, which are great. It's always wonderful when you can pull in an old element and make it new again and use it in your new plot line. So I have no idea how they're going to use Carl Creel, how it ties in with bringing in the SHIELD team, but he doesn't seem to be a willing player, very reluctant when he gets into the car.
Well, right. And he mentions being Talbot's hired gun, and that didn't work out to his satisfaction. And we certainly understand that, but it seems to simply be a matter of her saying, "You're not a hired gun. I'm putting together a team." Oh, you're putting together a team. I'll be part of the team. And he just gets in the car. So
as long as there are other powered individuals that I can do a super team with, I'm on board. Yeah. It still seemed like he had some reluctance, though. But yeah, that was an interesting persuasive element.
You know, but it certainly leads to that next question. Who's on her team? And is it simply a team to bring down SHIELD? You know, which I guess now, seeing that Ruby didn't do what Hale thought she should do or could do, it's going to take more than that. So, you know, be interesting to see how big's this robot army. I'm assuming it's not going to be as big of as the Star Wars clone armies. But
well, and it's also, you know, we always were thinking about when season 5 first started, and there was any possibility of anything happening other than in the future in space. We were always wondering, you know, aren't there some LMDs left over from when they left the framework? And here they're dealing with these robots that are decidedly not as realistic as LMDs. So we've taken a step back. And I think that's basically what I want to end my commentary with, is the fact that this did feel like a regression of sorts. Like we were going back to an iteration of Agents of SHIELD that we've already seen before, with the military leader trying to control things and bring them to bear. And I'm sure they're going to surprise me and go in a different direction. But this first episode back, to me, did feel a little bit too familiar in not a very good way. And I hope I'm wrong about that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I guess I keep thinking we've got to get to a point where Daisy or something is about to destroy the Earth.
Yeah, you got to get to that quickly. Yeah.
Right. So, yes, especially since we see that, was it Tancharoen or Jed Whedon, somebody I read on the internet that, you know, they're preparing for season five being the end.
Oh, right. There was, I think that was Jed Whedon. Yeah. He said, if this does end up being the end, we've got an ending that can serve as either a season or a series finale. So yeah, that's got to be fresh on everyone's mind as we get closer and closer to the season finale. So we shall see. You know, there's hope. There's always hope, basically. But we want to go into Faith's Coal Sash report here, and she did have a wealth of choices to choose from. And so here we go. Let's rewind a little bit to who won from our last podcast and then get to this week's choices.
Hello, everyone. It's time for the Coal Sash report. After a month away, I was really hoping this would be full of coal sass, but this sass is pretty coal shy. Plus, there were a lot of funny moments, but not a ton that I would consider straight-up sass. But before I get to those, here's the winner from episode 10. You think there'd be a law.
Guns, man! It's like cheating! You shouldn't give these to anyone who's not a really, really good person!
You think there'd be a law.
And now for this week's contenders. Number 1. Small but active fan base.
Various potential threats. You'd be surprised how frequently S.H.I.E.L.D. is mentioned.
We have a small but active fan base.
Number 2. More like Chud.
This place has secret tunnels. Like an Agatha Christie novel.
More like Chud.
Number 3. Could be worse.
These things look roomier from the outside.
It'll get us where we need to go.
Hey, could be worse.
True, we could be enslaved by an alien sociopath in a dystopian future.
Well, we could be trapped inside a virtual reality fascist state.
Or stuck at the bottom of the ocean.
Or stopping a crazy robot lady.
Or falling out of a plane.
Fighting Daisy's mom.
Or fighting Daisy's dad.
Or dancing.
And number 4. You seem fun.
Hello, I'm Noah. I believe saving you from imprisonment was wrong.
Oh, all right, cool. Well, you seem fun.
Did I miss your favorite moment? Hopefully not. Please be sure to join Tautos next week in tweeting your favorites to FBMC with the hashtag ColSass. Here's hoping the 100th episode will be full of classic Coulson. To vote for this week's contenders, please visit facebook.com/groups/agentsofshieldgsm. While you do that, I'm going to go hug pretty trees. Have a great week, everybody.
Some great ones there, that some of which we mentioned, and some new ones that bear repeating. So thank you very much, Faith, as always. We did just get a few feedback emails this week because I think people are still getting back into the routine. But I want to start off with one from Rainbird. She wrote to us just after last episode and missed the deadline. So this is flashing back a little bit, but it's a good discussion point. She says, what was the purpose of Enoch taking the team into Fractured Future if they're only going to end up back where they started? Was it just to give them some foreknowledge about the impending catastrophe? And it wasn't even certain they'd actually be able to find their way back. Why couldn't he have just told them what he knew? I assume he had more info than just Robin's visions. It all seems so convoluted and ultimately unnecessary. And that's a good question. I mean, I think part of it was to actually see and learn from what the catastrophe ended up as, so that they could make maybe change things because of their reaction to what they saw. But we also can't forget, and Rainbird couldn't possibly have known this at the time, that we have introduced a new ingredient, at least in this loop. I don't know if it's in every loop, and that's the presence of Deke, you know?
Right. And certainly as a teacher, the show me, don't tell me. And when you're showing me this fragment of what used to be Earth, you know, it's pretty devastating, and it certainly would be much more likely to, you know, send Coulson and the team on a path to make sure that doesn't happen than simply being told.
Right, exactly. So, and of course, from the narrative standpoint, we have to see the catastrophe in order to make it not only just an interesting time loop, because of course the whole time travel aspect of it can be a little bit brain melting at times, but it's also, you know, sets up a wonderful narrative twist and also separating it into two halves, two pods, as it were.
Yep. All right. Well, let's hear what Taltos has to say. She says, using an actual alien beacon in an attempt to lure out S.H.I.E.L.D. seems monumentally stupid.
Yeah.
The government knows that the Kree exist. Could they not come up with any type of bait that doesn't risk an alien invasion?
Yeah.
It seems particularly unwise to store those three monoliths in such close proximity to each other. And now that we've had the Kree beacon explode right in front of them.
Oh, right.
It seems like the monoliths combined with explosions could have some serious repercussions. I'm thinking like, yeah.
Well, even if it's just the cases that were enclosing them cracking and opening up, you know, they could liquefy and pull something in. That's a good point.
Right. But do they know what they do? I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D. knows what they do.
Well, that's true. Well, where is that facility? I thought that was just where Noah was in the lighthouse and they just had them inside. Yeah.
Oh, you're right. That's right. Oh, and in fact, he says all the people that know of their existence are in this room.
Right. So right. It's just as unknown as the lighthouse itself.
Right. Exactly. So she goes on and says, maybe even world ending ones.
Yes.
Is Ruby an LMD or an inhuman?
Oh, that's an interesting choice considering she's in charge of a bunch of robots.
It doesn't seem like a normal human, no matter how well trained, would be able to cut off Elena's arms while she was using her powers. Now, you brought that up, and I wonder if it has something to do with the weapons she's using.
Okay, so it could be something that's built into the weapon rather than an ability that she has.
Yes.
All right. There's so many possibilities there, and Taltos really knows how to hone in on exactly the most compelling elements that are left hanging. So I'm glad she posed these questions. Now let's hear from Skimmins. Skimmins always writes to us right after the episode airs. And in fact, she reminded me by emailing me, oh yeah, I've got to watch this on Saturday morning again. So she says, while I like the continuity of Framework Fitz showing up, I do wish they'd touch on Fitz's rush to the darker side more often. Yes, it was just an icer, but still, that's more of a move May or Coulson would have made than him. If they're going to do this plot, don't shy away from characters questioning his actions, because they can't deny Fitz has changed. While cool for some, it might not be the best outcome for others. Deke, I'm so excited for the banter, but also kind of about him surviving the blast, because that was such a good out for him. That's a good point, Skimmins. It definitely does sort of rob him of some of that heroism that he exhibited. I would now like to request a scene of Deke trying flavored Zimas, because that would be fun, I think. Piper, always fun to see her. Side note, looking good, girl. Personally, I wish it was Daisy they caught instead of the others, because it would make the cops look smart instead of being the typical, arguably bumbling idiots most shows make out of them to be in situations like this. And as Coulson said, Piper was taught better. So it kind of makes her character look foolish in order for that plot to happen. While I loved seeing Dr. Simmons again, I'm worried about Elena making it through this season. That's a real fear. I think we've talked about that before. Nitpick regarding the blade scene. If it could travel faster than Elena, shouldn't her arms have been in an up position, showing she tried to catch it instead of at her side? And if they were, shouldn't it have gone through her given the body position? At the least, she should have made a massive cut on her midsection. No pun intended, but this really cuts down the chances of my theory Elena would fight the team to let Coulson die, thinking it would save the future. She could probably do it, but it'd be harder to take them on now. So was the epilogue suggesting Hale wants to crack the Earth, or is that still a byproduct of another event? If she does, why? Hale acts in charge, but I'd watch myself if I was her around the kid, because she seems like she could easily turn on her if given the chance. A decent episode. And yeah, I think we all agree Hale's motives are completely opaque to us.
Yeah, and at the risk of playing a forensic scientist in terms of the arm positions and angles and all that, I mean, I guess my answer would be that maybe she had her hands above her head.
Yeah.
And then they just naturally went down to the, I know what she's saying.
Yeah.
And that's certainly valid, but
it was a visual gimmick. They needed to have it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to just accept the fact that it's a show and then it was necessary for them to do it that way. Cause I don't think it's too much of a leap, but yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that. And I definitely think there were a lot of surprises, a lot of twists that we weren't expecting where they deceived us. And I think deception was a really key part of this episode. So I do think it was a good episode. I just want to see where they take it from here. So we shall see. So we hope you enjoyed this episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but that's going to be it for this edition of The Sandbox. Keep up with show news and fan interaction by following us on Twitter at S.H.I.E.L.D. _GSM. And our popular Facebook group is at facebook.com/groups/Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. GSM, which is also where you can vote on the Kolsas report.
And Mike and I'll be back next week with our discussion of episode 12 of season 5 entitled The Real Deal. But remember, after the episode airs, head on over to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback to share your thoughts. Write us a message, record a comment using your computer's microphone, or call 304-837-2278.
And if you get a chance, please rate and review The Sandbox wherever you get your podcasts to let us know how you're enjoying our coverage of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Burger? Check. Onion rings? Check. Zima? I'm not from the future.